Chapter 103. He and Venus were necessarily seated close together, as each held a corner of the document, which was but a common sheet of paper. "Partner," apostrophe said Wegg, even more insinuatingly than before, "I propose that we cut it in half, and each keep a half." Apostrophe, Venus shook his shock of hair, as he replied, "It wouldn't do to mutilate it, partner. It might seem to be cancelled." Apostrophe, partner, apostrophe said Wegg, after a silence, during which they had contemplated one another, "Don't your speaking countenance say that you're a-going to suggest a middle course?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, Venus shook his shock of hair as he replied, "Partner, you have kept this paper from me once. You shall never keep it from me again. I offer you the box and the label to take care of, but I'll take care of the paper." Apostrophe, Silas hesitated a little longer, and then suddenly releasing his corner, and resuming his buoyant and benignant tone, exclaimed, "What's life without trustfulness? What's a fellow man without honor? You're welcome to it, partner, in a spirit of trust and confidence." Apostrophe, continuing to wink his red eyes both together, but in a self-communing way, and without any show of triumph, Mr. Venus folded the paper now left in his hand, and locked it in a drawer behind him, and pocketed the key. He then proposed a cup of tea, partner? Apostrophe, apostrophe, to which Mr. Wegg returned, "Thank ye, partner," apostrophe, and the tea was made and poured out. "Next," apostrophe said Venus, blowing at his tea in his saucer, and looking over it at his confidential friend, "comes the question, what's the course to be pursued?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, on his head, Silas Wegg had much to say. Silas had to say that he would beg to remind his comrade, brother, and partner, of the impressive passages they had read that evening, of the evident parallel in Mr. Boffin's mind between them, and the late owner of the bower, and the present circumstances of the bower, of the bottle, and of the box. That the fortunes of his brother and comrade, and of himself were evidently made, inasmuch as they had but to put their price upon this document, and get that price from the minion of fortune, and the worm of the hour, who now appeared to be less of a minion and more of a worm than had been previously supposed. That he considered it plain that such price was statable in a single expressive word, and that the word was halves. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that the question then arose when halves, apostrophe, should be called. That here he had a plan of action to recommend, with a conditional clause. That the plan of action was that they should lie by with patience, that they should allow the mounds to be gradually leveled and cleared away, while retaining to themselves their present opportunity of watching the process which would be, he conceived, to put the trouble and cost of daily digging and delving upon somebody else, while they might nightly turn such complete disturbance of the dust to the account of their own private investigations, and that, when the mounds were gone, and they had worked those chances for their own joint benefit solely, they should then, and not before, explode on the minion and worm. But here came the conditional clause, and to this, he entreated the special attention of his comrade, brother, and partner. It was not to be borne that the minion and worm should carry off any of that property which was now to be regarded as their own property. When he, Mr. Wegg, had seen the minion surreptitiously making off with that bottle, and its precious contents unknown, he had looked upon him in the light of a mere robber, and, as such, would have despoiled him of his ill-gotten gain, but for the judicious interference of his comrade, brother, and partner. Therefore, the conditional clause he proposed was, that, if the minion should return in his late sneaking manner, and if, being closely watched, he should be found to possess himself of anything, no matter what, the sharp sword impending over his head, should be instantly shown him, he should be strictly examined, as to what he knew or suspected, should be severely handled by them as masters, and should be kept in a state of abject moral bondage and slavery until the time when they should see fit to permit him to purchase his freedom at the price of half his possessions. If, said Mr. Wegg by way of peroration, he had erred in saying only halves, he trusted to his comrade, brother, and partner not to hesitate to set him right, and to reprove his weakness. It might be more according to the rights of things, to say two-thirds. It might be more according to the rights of things, to say three-fourths. On those points he was ever open to correction. Mr. Venus, having wafted his attention to this discourse over three successive saucers of tea, signified his concurrence in the views advanced. Inspirited hereby, Mr. Wegg extended his right hand, and declared it to be a hand which never yet, without entering into more minute particulars, Mr. Venus, sticking to his tea, briefly professed his belief as polite forms required of him, that it was a hand which never yet, but contented himself with looking at it, and did not take it to his bosom. Brother, said Wegg, when this happy understanding was established, I should like to ask you something. You remember the night when I first looked in here, and found you floating your powerful mind in tea? Still swilling tea, Mr. Venus nodded assent. And there you sit, sir, pursued Wegg with an air of thoughtful admiration, as if you had never left off. There you sit, sir, as if you had an unlimited capacity of assimilating the flagrant article. There you sit, sir, in the midst of your works, looking as if you'd been called upon for home, sweet home, and was obliging the company. A exile from home splendor dazzles in vain. Oh, give you your lowly preparations again, the birds stuffed so sweetly that can't be expected to come at your call. Give you these with a peace of mind dearer than all. Home, 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 sweet home. Be it ever, added Mr. Wegg in prose as he glanced about the shop, ever so ghastly, all things considered there's no place like it. You said you'd like to ask something, but you haven't asked it, remarked Venus, very unsympathetic in manner. Your peace of mind, said Wegg, offering condolence, your peace of mind was in a poor way that night. How's it going on? Is it looking up at all? She does not wish, replied Mr. Venus with a comical mixture of indignant obstinacy and tender melancholy, to regard herself, nor yet to be regarded, in that particular light. There's no more to be said. Dear me, dear me. Exclaimed Wegg with a sigh, but eyeing him, while pretending to keep him company and eyeing the fire, such as woman. And I remember you said that night, sitting there as I sat here said that night, when your peace of mind was first laid low, that you had taken an interest in these very affairs. Such as coincidence. Her father, rejoined Venus, and then stopped to swallow more tea. Her father was mixed up in them. You didn't mention her name, sir, I think? Observed Wegg, pensively. No, you didn't mention her name that night. Pleasant Riderhood. Indeed. Cried Wegg. Pleasant Riderhood. There's something moving in the name. Pleasant. Dear me. Seems to express what she might have been, if she hadn't made that unpleasant remark, and what she ain't, in consequence of having made it. Would it at all, pour balm into your wounds, Mr. Venus, to inquire how you came acquainted with her? I was down at the waterside, said Venus, taking another gulp of tea and mournfully winking at the fire looking for parrots taking another gulp and stopping. Mr. Wegg hinted, to jog his attention. You could hardly have been out parrot shooting, in the British climate, sir? No, said Venus fretfully. I was down at the waterside, looking for parrots brought home by sailors, to buy for stuffing. apostrophe, a, sir. Apostrophe, 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 and looking for a nice pair of rattlesnakes to articulate for a museum when I was doomed to fall in with her and deal with her. It was just at the time of that discovery in the river. Her father had seen the discovery being towed in the river. I made the popularity of the subject a reason for going back to improve the acquaintance, and I have never since been the man I was. My very bones is rendered flabby by brooding over it. If they could be brought to me loose, to sort, I should hardly have the face to claim them as mine. To such an extent have I fallen off under it. Apostrophe, Mr. Wegg, less interested than he had been, glanced at one particular shelf in the dark. Why, I remember, Mr. Venus, apostrophe, he said in a tone of friendly commiseration, apostrophe, for I remember every word that falls from you, sir. I remember that you said that night you had got up there, and then your words was, never mind. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the parrot that I bought of her, apostrophe, said Venus, with a despondent rise and fall of his eyes. Yes, there it lies on its side, dried up, except for its plumage, very like myself. I've never had the heart to prepare it, and I never shall have now. Apostrophe, with a disappointed face, Silas mentally consigned this parrot to regions more than tropical, and, seeming for the time, to have lost his power of assuming an interest in the woes of Mr. Venus, fell to tightening his wooden leg as a preparation for departure. Its gymnastic performances of that evening having severely tried its constitution. After Silas had left the shop, hatbox in hand, and had left Mr. Venus to lower himself to oblivion point with the requisite weight of tea, it greatly preyed on his ingenuous mind that he had taken this artist into partnership at all. He bitterly felt that he had overreached himself in the beginning by grasping at Mr. Venus's mere straws of hints, now shown to be worthless for his purpose. Casting about for ways and means of dissolving the connection without loss of money, reproaching himself for having been betrayed into an avowal of his secret, and complimenting himself beyond measure on his purely accidental good luck, he beguiled the distance between Clerkenwell and the mansion of the Golden Dustman. For Silas Wegg felt it to be quite out of the question that he could lay his head upon his pillow in peace without first hovering over Mr. Boffin's house in the superior character of its evil genius. Power, unless it be the power of intellect or virtue, has ever the greatest attraction for the lowest natures, and the mere defiance of the unconscious house front, with his power to strip the roof off the inhabiting family like the roof of a house of cards, was a treat which had a charm for Silas Wegg. As he hovered on the opposite side of the street, exulting, the carriage drove up. "There'll shortly be an end of you," apostrophe, said Wegg, threatening it with the hat box. "Your varnish is fading." Apostrophe, Mrs. Boffin descended and went in. "Look out for a fall, my lady dustwoman," apostrophe, said Wegg. Bella lightly descended and ran in after her. "How brisk we are," apostrophe, apostrophe, said Wegg. "You won't run so gaily to your old shabby home, my girl. You'll have to go there, though," apostrophe, a little while, and the secretary came out. "I was passed over for you," apostrophe, said Wegg. "But you had better provide yourself with another situation, young man." Apostrophe, Mr. Boffin's shadow passed upon the blinds of three large windows as he trotted down the room, and passed again as he went back. "You," apostrophe, cried Wegg. "You're there, are you? Where's the bottle? You would give your bottle for my box, dustman." Apostrophe, apostrophe, having now composed his mind for slumber, he turned homeward. Such was the greed of the fellow, that his mind had shot beyond halves, two-thirds, three-fourths, and gone straight to spoliation of the whole. Though that wouldn't quite do, apostrophe, he considered, growing cooler as he got away. That's what would happen to him, if he didn't buy us up. We should get nothing by that. apostrophe, we so judge others by ourselves, that it had never come into his head before, that he might not buy us up, and might prove honest, and prefer to be poor. It caused him a slight tremor as it passed, but a very slight one, for the idle thought was gone directly. He's grown too fond of money for that, apostrophe said Wegg. He's grown too fond of money. Apostrophe the burden fell into a strain, or tune as he stumped along the pavements. All the way home he stumped it out of the rattling streets, piano with his own foot, and forte with his wooden leg. He's grown too fond of money for that, he's grown too fond of money. Apostrophe, even next day Silas soothed himself with this melodious strain, when he was called out of bed at daybreak, to set open the yard gate, and admit the train of carts and horses, that came to carry off the little mound. And all day long, as he kept unwinking watch on the slow process which promised to protract itself through many days and weeks, whenever, to save himself from being choked with dust, he patrolled a little cinderous beady established for the purpose, without taking his eyes from the diggers, he still stumped to the tune. He's grown too fond of money for that, he's grown too fond of money. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.